Thank you, Tom. Tom DeSutter is an associate professor of soil science and the program leader for soil science at North Dakota State University, and is the 2016 section chair for environmental quality. He received BS and MS degrees from South Dakota State University and a PhD from Kansas State University. His research focus is on saline and sodic soils, lands disturbed through energy exploration, and phosphorus losses resulting from freeze-thaw and spring snowmelt runoff. Tom.
Well, thank you for attending today. I was a moderator this morning, so I know how to work the system. So if you have any questions. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about soils and health and try to lay some groundwork, and then also move into a direction that we don't normally talk about. So, and how that relates to soils. So I hope you enjoy it. Keep in mind that there's no data, so everything can be interpreted differently. So if you have a different thought process on an idea or on a concept, this is where we start the discussion. So all of that has to develop from something. So let's move ahead. Okay, so soils and health, is this a new or old concept? Well, you can probably say that it's older than dirt, right? Especially if you're a fluva aquant, certainly older than that. So if we look at one of my faculty that I had when I was at South Dakota State, Dr. Bob Cole, always preached, there's nothing new under the sun. And what he meant by that was dig in the literature, because you're going to find somebody did something that was related to what you're doing. So I always try to keep that in mind as I do my own research. But if we go back to Moses or Charlton Heston, see what the land is like and whether people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees on it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. So obviously, 1400 BC, we can say that the concept is older than dirt. Okay, so if we move ahead in time, men are like plants, and I really do like that one. I was like, men are like plants. It makes a lot of sense. The goodness and flavor of the fruit proceeds from the peculiar soil and exposition in which they grow. Okay, so if we move ahead a little more, in 1940, so this was in regards to poor soils, which led to stoop-shouldered or poverty-stricken people. Okay, so the soil in itself had a direct impact on the health of the people and the quality of that soil. If we feed the soil, it will feed us. We certainly know that to be the case. Only productive soil can support a prosperous people. I think if we go through time and we look at the books that are available, Dirt, the Erosion of Civilization lays that out very nicely. It's a wonderful book of stories about how soils has shaped civilizations. And to be properly and healthfully fed, we must have food from soils containing the elements necessary to maintain good health. If you get a chance to read the book 40 Chances, which I certainly recommend, it touches on a lot of things about how soil health is related to human health in Africa and in Central America. So keep those books in mind as we move forward. Okay, so certainly there's been a push, right? There's been a push for soil health. It used to be called soil quality. That was when Bob Soyka and I forget the gentleman's name at the Tilth Lab, Doug Harlan, had their arguments about soil quality, right? That was always the issue. But now it's kind of morphed into soil health. So now we're going to talk about soil health versus soils and health, which can be very linked together. Okay, there's been definitions for soil health. It's capacity of a soil to function and sustain biological productivity, maintain environmental quality, and promote plant, animal, and human health. Okay, so we're already at that one health sort of idea when we integrate more than one concept into that. So what about soils and health? Is there a definition for that? Okay, this is where it took some thinking on my part to sort of tease out, do we need a definition or is there already one out there? So I pondered probably long enough, and I came up with this. Interrelationship between soil as a provider and protector of an individual's physical and mental health. And one of the things that I want to point out is We've talked a lot about physical health, and if you go back into the literature by Eric Brevik and Tom Sauer, they've done a nice job of looking at that physical health and how soils and physical health are related. Barely, if ever, do we touch on the mental health side of it. And that's the part that we'll spend a little bit of time on today. Okay? So, that didn't pop up correctly. So let's go provider and protector for physical health. So being a provider provides something to increase physical health and provides something to decrease physical health. So it could be something that's negatively impacting health. As a protector, processes occur whereby physical health is increased or not harmed. Okay, so these were the definitions that I came up with. I felt that they were at least a starting point for the conversation. Okay, so let's go back, let's go look at the physical health part. So if you go to the article by Eric and Lynn, they outline some things that are very nice about the physical health of people and soils. Okay, so we have water purification, medicines, food security, inorganic pollutants, organic pollutants, soil-borne pathogens, geophagy, climate change, and nutrients. Okay, so what I did is I was trying to think about, are they providers or protectors of human health, of the physical? So I decided that the soil is a provider and a protector, right? It's a provider and a protector. It provides the bacteria, the fungi, which allow the antibiotics and the medicines to be produced, which are a protector. If we think about food security, obviously that's one that we could lump together. The soil produces food, which provides security from malnutrition and hunger. Okay. Inorganic pollutants. I had a hard time coming up with a protector side of that, so I left that as a provider of inorganic pollutants, which could cause negative harm. Organic pollutants. Soils are a wonderful recycler of organic compounds, so I said, well, it's a protector. It's protecting us from organic compounds that could be harmful. Soil-borne pathogens, a provider. If you read Eric's work, he lays that out very nicely. But as our next speaker may touch on a little bit, if you're exposed to bacteria, sometimes that helps with reducing some diseases. So if you're playing in the dirt, and we'll use the word dirt because it's more fun, I guess. If you're playing in the dirt, you're exposed to bacteria, you're building up your antibiotic sort of system, and it will help you keep. Now, I don't recommend eating it, which is the next one. But so this is the concept of eating soil. But in some cases, people who are hungry do add soil to their diet to get the micronutrients that they need. So, but it can also be a provider of those soil-borne pathogens. Climate change, soils are a protector for climate change, right? We're sequestering carbon, we're trying to minimize the impacts. Nutrients, the soils provide nutrients, but also are a protector of those nutrients that get into the environment. And then water purification is a protector. So these were the things that I was thinking about is, like, how does this definition work with the physical health? But the hard one was more the mental health side. And so it is a provider, you know, it provides something to increase mental health or provides something to decrease mental health. Protector, processes occur whereby mental health is increased or not harmed. Okay, so these are the ones that I came up with. Basically, we're talking about nourishment, responsibility, services, pride, depression, anxiety, accomplishments, life, and the disruption. Let's go through each of these. Nourishment, and I don't mean nourishment as in a mineral sense, but as an act, right? It's very nourishing. Every spring, especially if you go to Fargo, where the winters are long, people cannot wait to dig in the garden. It's very nourishing for their soul, right? It's very nourishing, and it's very rewarding and therapeutic if you're a farmer or if you're a gardener. Responsibility. There are, you know, land is handed down from generation to generation, and people have a responsibility for, they feel, to keep that soil healthy. services, of course, ecosystem services, we talk a lot about that now. The aesthetic value of the landscape has a very, positive impact on mental health. Work ethic, or pride, just the work ethic, how fields look, the awards for stewardship, the monetary income. People feel pride, right? They feel pride when they're farming. They feel pride when they have livestock. The one that doesn't get talked about enough, unfortunately, is the depression and anxiety. A sense of worth, the stigma about getting mental help or asking for help, fear of failure. I found a really good article. It was about the collapse of the dairy industry in Australia, and the suicide rate just went off the charts. And it was because of the farmers. They talked about this: if I fail as a farmer, I fail as a man. So the land, the soil, the interaction with all of that is extremely important. But as most farmers that I know are very stoic in their mental health, they're not going to let on that they feel that they feel depression or anxiety. They'll just ride it out, and nobody will ever know. But there's a stigma if they go see somebody in a white coat that now they sort of have a label. So I think it's an important topic that we need to bring forward, and how soils can be a part of it. Accomplishment, conservation, large yields, the act of working with one's hands. There's nothing better than going to the garage or the field or anything and working with your hands. It's very rewarding. Life, soil is life. Sense of who I am. I am a farmer. That's what it's their livelihood. I mean, I can just see my wife's grandfather, and that's as soon as they took him off the farm, his health declined extremely fast. That's very common, unfortunately. Disruption, accidental spills, pipelines, new roads. How does this impact my soil? This is a conversation that is extremely in the forefront of the news right now. The Keystone Pipeline would have been part of that. The Dakota Access Pipeline, which is, if you follow the news at all in North Dakota, it's number one probably. We're going to vote Republican, respective, that doesn't matter. But the forefront of the news is going to be on that right now. So, okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about a case study that we have that myself and my graduate students have experienced. This was a landowner that has the disruption, the responsibility, and the depression and anxiety. So in 2013, there was a 20,000 barrel oil spill on this land in northwest North Dakota. It ended up being about 7 acres, and then it morphed into 7 acres by 50 feet deep, and then now it's the footprint's like 30 or 40 acres. So if we kind of move forward, Steve Jensen on the left is the landowner. He drove up with his combine. He found this big spill. And then Patty Jensen on the right, and she's standing with Peter O'Brien, who's the PhD student on this project. They are the ones that are impacted. They are the ones that are impacted by this spill. Yeah, the oil company is impacted, but the livelihood of these two has been greatly altered. So what I want to point out, so this is what the site looks like in 2015. That area that I highlighted is Steve's great-grandmother's land. She has the deed for that land signed by William Taft. Okay, so nobody can tell me that land doesn't have some value and that soil has value to that family. And that's one of the things that is very hard for Patty to deal with is the disruption of the land and how that's going to be handled. So a little bit about the Jensen story. In a matter of overnight, the Jensens had dozens of new people into their lives. Regulators, news passed, everything, Greenpeace, everybody was trying to get to Tioga, North Dakota, which is not a common thing to say, believe me. But a lot of disruption in their life, a lot of disruption. The Jensens are heavily involved in the cleanup procedures and remediation levels. They've been brought into the fold about all of this. So now they have to make decisions based on, they're very educated people in life. Believe me, they can do anything they want. But they don't have the background science knowledge to say one way or another and to make the argument one way or the other. And that's another thing about the disruption in their life. On top of that, there was another oil borrow pit that was discovered at the same site. So now not only dealing with one oil company, they're dealing with two oil companies, one of them who doesn't want to clean it up at all, and the other one is taking responsibility. So that's been a very challenging thing on the family as well. Okay. Unfortunately, they're pulled into this new normal since 2013. They deal with oil companies on a daily basis, the remediation company quite often, state regulators weekly, advisory groups. They sit on advisory groups now for the state. They give public speeches. Newspapers have knock, knock, knock. They even had a Danish newspaper that came to their farm, and unfortunately, Patty and Steve are Danish, so they invited them in. Advocacy groups, they were asked to be part of the Dakota Access Pipeline protest because of their experience. And then, of course, we hope that we're a positive experience on their life, but again, they didn't expect us to come into their life either. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about was this. Patty feels responsible for the land. We were driving around one day, and she looked at me and she said, I feel responsible for this land, and that's part of that whole One Health thing that we're talking about. So where do we move forward? Well, we have our working definition again, but I want to underline and preface the mental health, because that's one thing that we do not talk about very often. Where do we go from here? Can soils fit into the One Health approach? Of course, right? It's part of that environmental, the environmental side. We need more education about soils and health and soil health. This, we have a wonderful movement going on, and I think it would be a shame to see that stalled in any way. Bring in the public health people with this. They're very trained in their field, and I think it would be a worthwhile discussion to have. And make sure we keep soils in the conversation, right? We've got to keep soils in the conversation. These are the books and the references. I highly recommend just Googling. Use the Google, or call my mom said would use the Googling. Look for Eric Brevik. And if you haven't read either of those books, make sure you read all of them. They're very good. So with that, that's all I got. So, all right. I didn't say news pest, but it may have came out that way, but no, newspapers. He's seen a lot of the activity out west, so he's very, very sensitive to all this, yes. Yes, sir.
It's kind of peripheral to your talk, but there's a whole body of literature on greening the urban landscapes so that the vast majority of citizens who actually live in cities get kind of a rural, outdoors and green environment. It has a big impact on their mental health and on health care costs and all this kind of thing. So it's peripheral to what you're saying, but there's a large and interesting body of knowledge there.
Okay, yeah. So thank you for sharing. Yes, sir.
I think there's a little more information out there on at least minerals related to soils and human health. Maybe you're aware of that.
The minerals? Well, a lot of that information is in those papers by Brevik and Sauer, so I didn't want to bring that into the fold since they were so widely available already. But yeah, thank you for that. Yes, sir?
So, Tom, you have thought about this a lot. How do you get the average public person to understand the importance of taking care of our soil? Most people, they might be aware that there's some sort of issue going on in the Dakotas about a pipeline, but they have no idea why the people that are concerned about that are really caring about the soil. They don't understand it. How do you talk to the average person about that?
Yeah, that's a discussion that, so the question is, how do you bring the conversation forward to people that aren't necessarily in tune with what's going on? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So
I think the Jansen story is very powerful, by the way.
Yeah, okay. Fortunately or unfortunately, we have been thinking about this for quite a while. We have lots of spills, brine spills, pipelines, roads, and I think we're fortunate to have a very strong extension system, which does allow that conversation to happen at multiple levels. I don't know the answer for getting it to the broader public, like the urban public that may not touch with the farming communities. Maybe somebody wants to comment on that.
Evidence of livestock and women, for example, will eat soil to look for minerals. And someone who should hear your story, so because they do get the word out so effectively to the people, and so maybe that's a link that we need to create.
Yeah, so the intent, I hope, was to start the conversation, and maybe we can start moving the needle a little bit on the more broad education of those people. It's very difficult, right, because it's hard to relate to something that hasn't happened to you, and unfortunately, for the Native Americans and Standing Rock and for Patty and Steve and for all the landowners that have had brine spills that have to deal with new people in their lives, it becomes reality. So,
okay. Thank you. Thank you so much, Tom.